A new book by the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization released today is suggesting a paradigm shift towards more sustainable and inclusive agriculture worldwide. The Food Agency stresses that we need to be able to produce higher yields over the longer term to feed the future population. Drawing on case studies from around the planet, the new book illustrates how the Save and Grow approach to agriculture, advocated by FAO, is already being successfully employed. Joseph Kienzle is an agricultural engineer with FAO in Rome, and he joins me now to provide a bit more insight into the case studies and analysis featured in the book. Mr. Kienzle, thank you for joining me.
Hello.
The information and case studies in the book are reinforcing the Save and Grow approach. What is this approach exactly?
Well, what we mean is eco-based agriculture, where we really draw on nature's own ability and contribution to production. This was sometimes forgotten in the past, where we have put a lot of emphasis on maybe overuse of chemicals, such as mineral fertilizer or energy-intensive agriculture with a lot of plowing that has often had a damaging effect on soils. The other thing is, for example, growing legumes to build up the stock of nitrogen with a natural approach with legume crops. And the third one is really, and I'm saying this as an agricultural engineer, direct seeding, timely seeding, avoid energy-intensive plowing, if possible, precision irrigation, needs-based fertilizer management that is, again, timely and precise, where we, again, need innovations in machinery, be it small or big, but specifically also for the smallholder farmers.
So why is there such a strong emphasis on maize, rice, and wheat?
Well, these are our cereals, and really there's an ancient bond between humans and cereals, because it was those crops, the cereals, that made people and humans at that time stop being hunters and gatherers and settle down and actually become farmers. Up to today, the population growth has always been able to merge or to fit with cereal yield growth. And that is actually a big success of agricultural development and research. But today, with climate change, with environmental degradation, we have actually stagnating yields, threatening the cereal production and world food security with it. Considering that we will be many more people in 2050, we will need to feed those people. So there's work to do to keep on going with sustainable intensification of cereal production.
Going back to the Save and Grow approach, has the approach already been widely adopted at the field level globally?
Well, in my view, it has. You know, we have the gist of the concept. This now we have to break down into practices that are location specific. But if you look at conservation agriculture, that is part of Save and Grow, according to our figures, it is currently 155 million hectares grown around the globe. This is about 10% of the farmland. This is already a very good start. And also, if you look at these 11 examples that the book provides, all of them are very integrated, and they are going beyond piloting, beyond, let's say, tiny island approach. These are really make a difference. And therefore, I can safely say we have started, and we are on quite a good way towards sustainable intensification as we describe it in this publication.
Could you give me a few examples of how this approach has worked for farmers?
Today, there are 2 million of 19 million hectare farmland in Kazakhstan are done under conservation agriculture, which means timely and direct seeding, using other crops such as canola, lentils, flax, sunflower for rotation, and keeping soil cover as much as possible. And during the severe drought in 2012, the farmers practicing this type of approach did have harvest, while the conventional farmers had lost everything. So that's really a very clear example where we want to go and to be more climate resilient. A second one, I want to mention the endogenetic plains. This is actually where the Green Revolution has been implemented most intensively, and it is the breadbasket of 1.8 billion people. However, there was this phenomenon of soil fatigue. Despite more inputs, more fertilizer, despite improved seeds and more intensive agriculture, the yields were stagnating. So it was, in this case, the rice-wheat consortium of the ZGIR centers that promoted, together with farmers, resource-conserving technologies. And again, today, it's actually the zero-tillage technology, laser-assisted leveling of land, retention of crop residues, permanent bed planting, dry seeding in rice, and surface seeding in wheat that has changed, that has made this region again being the real breadbasket. And thirdly, let me come to Africa. Across southern Africa and the maize-growing regions of Africa, there's this amazing approach where maize is cultivated in conservation farming style, but including leguminous trees, the so-called Phyterbia tree, which is a nitrogen-fixing tree that is standing in between the maize fields. And the funny thing about this tree is During the rainy season, it has no leaves, and the leaves are actually covering the soils. And while the dry season is on, when the maize is harvested, the leaves are growing back. It's a symbiotic system between maize and trees, which is quite unique. However, compared to the other systems, you must accept that this system is still largely based on hand labor or animal-drawn reaper system. Therefore, specifically for us from agricultural engineering, the next challenge will be to identify sustainable and suitable mechanization options and inputs, but they have to be appropriate to smallholder requirements and friendly to the trees.
What impact do you hope this book will have on readers and policymakers?
We hope that it's understood that the change that has to be done by the farmers, entrepreneurs, practitioners. They are the ones who will put this concept in practice, and they're already doing it according to our cases we have. But specifically to get the smallholders to participate in this process, we need policymakers to work on what we call normally enabling environment for specifically the smallholders and private sector service providers, input suppliers, NGOs, civil society, to focus also on the smallholder farmers. And in that way, I'm sure we will be able to have safe and grow-conform farming systems, including for smallholders, for family farmers, with appropriate tools, equipment, and mechanization.
Mr. Kinsler, thank you for your time.
Thank you, too.